Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, Preps Nation? We are back and fired up to be recapping a ton of recent action from the summer circuit. And it's been really busy. We had ALL championships, NLF championships, a couple of IL events, really stretching into the dead period as well. So it's been a really busy week and a half, 2 weeks or so, and fired up to be recapping things. And with me today is IL's Kevin Brown, as well as a new member of the IL Preps Pod, and that is Ned Forbush, who we will get to an introduction of. But first, Kev, kick us off. How you doing? Give us a quick summary of how you're feeling.
Dan, always pumped to talk some ball with you and gather some findings here on the summer circuit and the club scene here. So it's a lot of great players, a lot of great tournaments and events that we've attended, and none other than the great esteemed new guest on the pod here to help us corral it all together.
And I'll set the table here for Ned to introduce himself, but just will say that Ned has been a valued member here for about 2 years in a combination of different roles. And really excited to have him helping out and contributing to the evaluation and analysis space on the club circuit.
Yeah, Dan, Kevin, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on, letting me join in. Just a quick background on myself. From Baltimore, went to Friends School of Baltimore, and then played 4 years of lacrosse at the University of Denver. And I've been working here since the 24 summer, kind of on and off. And then really since, about a year ago, I've been working straight. So I've been watching a lot of lacrosse with Dan and Kevin, did a lot of, watching high school in the spring, and have kind of been on the recruiting trail a little bit here in the summer. So definitely happy to chime in with some names and thoughts here with you guys.
And now it is time to spread those wings and give us some of that deep cutting analysis here on the summer circuit. Among the many spots that we've been since the last time that we were able to record was Crab Feast. And I think that that's a good spot to start, just like we said, to kind of give you a couple guys and, let you get your feet underneath of you. And then we'll start to spread out a little bit. We won't necessarily go event by event and, just kind of hit some of the top of the few favorite guys that we've seen along the way among many different spots. But kick us off here. Give us some of those 2029 standouts from your time at Crab Feast.
Yeah, I had a good time at Crab Feast at some of the local, MIAA high schools, mostly Boys Latin and Calvert Hall. But a few 29s to point out. The first guy is Kane Primanti, who is an attackman from Malvern, plays for Fusion Futures, is a big lefty shooter, is a great, off the catch and attacking approaches or coming up the hash. Was really impressed with him and the way he played for his Fusion Futures team that's stacked with talent. Kind of another guy that's on that Fusion Futures team is Kale Seaman, who's a middie at Haverford for Fusion Futures as well. Gets downhill, a playmaker out of the box. Was really impressed with him too. And then one more guy I'll hit on here is Blaze Wakefield, who was a faceoff guy at Western Reserve, played for Resolute Ohio, 29. He did a great job winning faceoffs kind of multiple ways. He could win it forward, win it backwards, win it to his wings, kind of controlled the dot, and was comfortable with the ball and the stick post win, and was really impressed with him.
Love it. Perfect. So if that is your alley-oop to kind of let you get your feet underneath of you, now I'm going to throw one to Kev here, a quick lob. I'm Dwayne Wade. You're LeBron coming in behind me. One of the things I know you wanted to touch on, Kev, was 5-5 and just some of the ripple effects that had. I'll just let you take the reins and kind of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for the people who aren't aware, which I'm sure is very few at this point, it's been a few weeks now, end of June, being in July. It was rumored before that the NCAA was going to implement this age-based eligibility model, aka 5-5, like you said here. So when Division I student athletes, it grants them up to 5 years of eligibility. It's basically to take away redshirt years, which was more of a problem in basketball specifically. And you saw some pro players from overseas maybe come back to some high-profile programs. So it grants them up to 5 years of eligibility if they enroll in college no later than the academic year after their 19th birthday is the exact phrasing. And it's going to have a lot of ripple effects, right? The simple math of it all is the number of spots for this 2028 class will be a little bit lower for a lot of programs who are either saving spots for players that they want to return on their team who are rising seniors, they want to dip into the transfer portal next year, or some other mechanism. And you know, there's a lot of fear mongering around the 5-5, whether it's just 28s not getting the looks that they should. A lot of commitments really just fly off the board these first couple of weeks immediately, as you know, when the NCAA also kind of pushed back the first contact date for September 1st this year to September 9th, and that gives college coaches their Labor Day weekend back. But it, I think more importantly, gives them a little more time to, I think we see it every year with those communications on that cycles through the club coaches, high school coaches, who are you interested in? Is there mutual interest there? I think when these first offers go in, we may be seeing a lot of guys take that first offer right away. So it'll be interesting to track from an IL Prep's point of view, where we can kind of track these commitments and compare it to the class of 2027, compare it to the class of 2026. This 2028 class, if you're in it, you just got to keep your head down, stay patient. And Cap, I don't know if you have anything to add, but first couple weeks of September will be very interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of alluded to it. I think the biggest thing is, like, you can only control so much. Yeah, there's, like, a little bit of, you know, I'll say a sense of, you know, dread maybe, or like there's a bummer aspect of the fact that this ruling happens to fall for this 2028 class. So like, you know, only so many people are going to be as impacted by this as the 2028 class. So like, yeah, you know, like there's certainly sympathy that exists there. And, you know, you feel for the guys that now maybe feel like a sense of, you know, there's less spots, or it's going to be harder for me to end up at my dream spot or at the Division One level, or, you know, so on and so forth. But whoever spends more time feeling sorry for themselves is falling farther behind the pack, right? Like, you can only control so much, and that's working to put yourself in the best position possible, right? And so, you know, it's like, keep your head down, keep working hard, do everything you can to put yourself on in the best position possible. And that really doesn't change anything from what you were doing before, right? And so I think it's important to kind of, you know, have conversations with your club coach and your high school coaches, and, you know, having somebody that you can really rely on for super informed and knowledgeable advice that is specific to you is probably one of the most important things about this entire process. And so, you know, this now just becomes one of those extra questions and an additional layer that, you know, you're working into the standard questions and the standard relationship that, you know, you probably had in a lot of those player to club coach relationships before and high school coaches. The last thing I'll add, and then we can shift back into some of those standouts, is, you know, like, I think every conversation I've had about this, and including this one right now with you and I, it's like so much speculating. There may be this, there may be that, and I don't know exactly what we'll do. And, you know, like, there's so much still ahead to be sorted out and for people to kind of figure out, and, you know, all of those types of things that, you know, jumping to conclusions that, you know, it's going to have this ripple effect or that ripple effect may end up being, you know, just fool's gold, right? And so, again, just to come back to the earlier point of, like, you know, if you're a player and you're listening to this, like, your job is to just continue to keep your head down and control the controllables and NCAA statutes and rules and limitations and violations and, you know, all those types of things are very much so things that you cannot control. Seem fair, Ned?
Yeah.
What do you think, Bush?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. And it's funny because I kind of went through my recruiting process kind of took place around the time when it officially switched to going to September 1st of your junior year. And when I was in eighth grade, there was kids, you know, committing to schools in eighth grade. And then when this big thing happened, you know, at September 1st, nobody really knew what was going to happen. And I think it's kind of similar in this case, like nobody really has all the answers and you kind of just have to, you know, see what happens and go with the flow and kind of attack it as it comes to you. So.
Love it. Super well said. All right, Kev, let's get into some standouts. You have been an absolute warrior, a road demon everywhere along the East Coast, I feel like. You know, you have been there. If there's turf, you have seen it this summer. Let's start with, you know, just some of the guys that along that trail you feel like, you know, you would be remiss not to give some shout outs and, you know, just some of the guys that left the strongest impressions on you along the way.
At NAL and down at the turf, it's one of the premier tournaments every summer, and I really look forward to going to it. And you continue to see these guys right at Alliance at whether it's tournaments earlier in the summer as well. But Wake McKnight, his name is hot on the trail. With obviously, it's a recognizable last name. The Virginia ties there is righty scoring from the outside up the hash. Various spots on the field, and his play to lead Mad Dog National against a West Coast star-studded squad as well, was just awesome to watch. He can do a lot of damage on the right wing, whether it's just as the point man on the fast break, off ball movement, or when they need a go-to guy in the clutch time or at the end of the shot clock. He's a fascinating prospect in my eye because he can just get it done in a variety of ways. I'm curious your thoughts on if you guys have seen McKnight in action this summer.
Yeah, I've seen him live. I knew of he has been on the radar for a really long time. I will say I think the first time I saw him live was NHSLS last fall. And even before that, like I remember sitting down with Matt Witcher, and we sat down and I remember immediately pointing to him and saying, like, the kid down there, the attackman, is going to end up being one of the best kids in the class. And he's like, it's fascinating that you already, you know, are able to, you know, kind of reach those conclusions. But it's just telling of a couple of things. One, he's really good, right? Like, that's a simple starting point. Produces, scores, assists, points everywhere he goes. Super, super reliable. But then furthermore, it's indicative of his game style. He's a, you know, potential quarterback at the next level and like a dominant ball carrying kid that can attack you from different spots. And there's just only so many of those guys that can do it with the reliability and trust and like sure handedness while also being, you know, a good shooter and good finisher as well. And so, again, I think, you know, to wrap it up, like really, really high radar kid that came into the summer with a reputation and has lived up to it for sure.
It's fascinating because he's on the same line and PJ Kennedy was scoring in bunches on Saturday, and Wade McKnight kind of took the mantle when they needed it most in clutch time, and kind of saw flashes of it with the Texas Nationals team this past weekend at Alliance as well. So that duo in particular, yeah, I've got my eyes on.
Really skilled, smooth player. Started for Culver this year, who, you know, had a really, really good season, finished at second in the nation, and was one of their key facilitators. And again, just like super, super sure-handed. I think what stands out to me when I watched PJ is his like composure and ability to dodge with pressure and dodge against, you know, physical defenders and just kind of use his frame and roll off of them. But also is, you know, fast enough and quick enough and, you know, just has a little bit of the burst that it takes to be able to clear his hands when it comes time. And so, again, just a bigger body ball carrier that does a ton of damage all over the field. And again, to your point of like versatility between working at X or like on the righty wing, I think PJ checks those boxes as well in terms of being dangerous from a variety of spots, but definitely at X and on that right wing.
100%, and playing with a powerful righty like Wade and McKnight, just it was fascinating to see them coincide like that. Big body, really hard to deal with. A couple of my other Mad Dog guys, I just want to throw at you quickly here. Just really impressed by the play of Brig McKay, a defender at a Culver. He's got the physicality, the physical tools, takeaway skills, can clear it upfield after calls turnovers. And he was really impressive. The way that he kind of operated defensively down there. And Weston Guerrero, I think we've talked about a bunch, but whether it was for Mad Dog at Main Stage at Hopkins as well, he played really well at, won goalie MVP honors there. Case Billings is a guy I think you're interested in talking about. I'll throw it to you next, but the last guy I'll throw out to you, Will Cornell. He's got some savviness to his game where he can hit you on the invert, hit you in a variety of spots. His field level vision to see through defenses was what struck my eye. So they played West Coast Stars, like I mentioned, in that title game, and Reber Diesel, just the best name you can have for a short stick defensive midfield standout. And Diesel just brings the game to his opponents, man, with his physicality, on ball ability, and overall strength. And, Sawyer Bly is just kind of the, I think, headliner on that attack unit that just has so much speed when he has that open space, where I'm interested where he ends up in our final rankings here, because he is an already highly touted player and has all the tools to excel at the next level.
Yeah, really well said. I like all those guys. Mad Dog, in addition to the guys that you shouted out, have a handful of like big, strong, athletic midfielders that, like, they don't grow on trees like that. Mad Dog has a handful of them. So if you're into downhill dodgers that draw slides, and if they don't get slid to, are, like, able to hammer the ball, that is a must-stop spot for, coaches looking for those types of guys, which is everyone, for the record. And so in addition to those guys, I would shout those out. Ben Sullivan, one of them. Cameron Hill, another one. Both of those guys just really impressed when I saw them most recently. Briggs, you mentioned, already committed. One of a couple are Army commits that we will end up touching on throughout the course of this episode. But
great job, Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, a perfect landing point. And yeah, really, I think what stands out to me when I watch him is just like position first, super, super dialed discipline, doesn't take a ton of chances, just, covers the ball and is right in hips and matches feet well and all those types of things. So brings a lot to the table without being one of those guys that like is overextending or over pursuing or like this dominant pops off the page type of athlete. And then, yeah, I'll also quickly echo your sentiment about Case Billings and vision and skipping the ball. Like, I think that was the first thing that stuck out to me when watching him, is he catches the ball off of one of those big, strong midfielders, draws a slide, swings to him, and now he's catching it with his eyes up against a rotating defense and is able to make really good decisions and throw these pinpoint accurate skip balls. So, like, really, really impressed with him as well, and just, that's kind of what I would say is his most elite trait.
I added that as well to Will Cornell's game. So you could tell Mad Dog was moving the ball really well offensively. What's your Sawyer Bly take for me? How do you like his game?
Yeah, I think, again, like, versatility is the first thing that comes to mind. He is an awesome combination of is skilled enough to play attack with an incredible motor, like a strong enough motor and athleticism to play on wings and be an impact between the lines and defensively as well. And then is, offensively a good enough dodger and shooter to be a downhill midfielder. And so I think one of the things that stands out to me about him is just like, what he eventually molds into over the course of the next 2 years is going to be like a really, really special blend of those three things. And then what he turns into at the next level you know, could be really, really special as a result of all of that versatility on top of his athleticism and like a high compete kid, a really strong motor lineage. He's got older brothers that are at the Division One level already. You know, there's just a lot to be said for Sawyer and a lot to like about his game.
It's fascinating because there are so many high level attackmen, I think.
I think of him as a midfielder, just for the record.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got the speed to play midfield as well.
He played midfield in the spring for the most part. He played a little bit of attack here and there, but for the most part was a midfielder. And again, just like I think playing him at attack doesn't allow him to be between the lines where his,
totally.
You know, to me, one of those. His top traits is just that he plays with such an edge and he's a high motor kid that, you know, you gotta let that shine.
More of an attempt to transition a little bit outside of the West Coast Stars and into some other attackmen that we'd like to talk about, specifically on the Eclipse team, where we saw a very dynamic duo doing damage at the Sweetlax Summer Challenge, where they ended up victors in the 28th division, and Hunter Hanford took home MVP honors. Super exciting lefty. We saw him scorch a hole through the net in the bracket play early on Sunday. His man up goal, just absolutely. He's got a vicious lefty shooting stroke. You can tell why we interviewed him, and he looks up to Coulter Maxey and Mac O'Keefe, and you can tell why when you watch his highlights. He is phenomenal, but he also is not a one-dimensional lefty finisher. He's a guy who can carry up the lefty hash and hit that diagonal skip down to Jay Gashi, who really caught my eye as someone who has a lot of potential as a righty attackman who can do a lot of damage coming up from X, that up the hash, dodging, and finishing was just a sight to behold, and I think has a lot of potential to make some noise at a big time Division I school.
Yeah, and that duo is turned into a trio now at this point in the summer. Earlier in the summer, they were missing Gray Wildman from New Canaan, who had an excellent spring season. Ned, I know that you got to see that trio live in action at NLF. Take the reins for a second and just talk about Gray in addition to those two guys.
Yeah, I watched, you know, Gray play some of New Canaan in the spring, where he was probably their best offensive player and had a phenomenal sophomore season. And then, you know, got to see him at NLF and was just impressed with, you know, when he had the ball in his stick, his ability to, you know, use some of his size and strength to kind of bounce off of defenders and create space for himself and hammer the ball with his right hand. And, you know, I saw it too, for New Canaan in the spring. And I think like you said, Dan, it's definitely turned into a trio at attack with Gashi and Hanford. And that Eclipse attack was really fun to watch. And I got to see it front and center when they had this great game against Annapolis Hawks, where they were down, and you know, Hanford was creating goals for them, and Wildman scored a big one in the fourth quarter and a big comeback win against Hawks. So yeah, all three of those guys are really, really talented.
And I'll pick it up from there. I've seen this Eclipse team play a ton, and then I've seen Brunswick play a ton. I saw Taft play in person this spring, and I saw New Canaan play in person this spring as well. So I've seen all three of those guys a ton, in addition to the Eclipse group as a whole. All three of them are a blend of different things that make that unit really special and really dangerous. Gashi, I think, is so interesting because all summer he's been so ball dominant and can pick you up off the end line, can dodge you, and has put defenders on their heels all summer. All spring, he plays mostly off ball and was a killer of a shooter. Awesome attacking approaches, so like you could see the dodging ability, and like it's not shocking by any means to see him be the facilitator that he is this summer, but to now have both data points of like how skilled he is and how good he is with Taft in these off-ball roles, to then see him in the summer as a facilitator as well, just speaks to his general game and how well-rounded he is. I love his ability up the hash that you mentioned, really dangerous there. If he takes the left hash, it's like a backhand or this slick left-handed, like quick release. Again, I think he's really, really dangerous. We also saw him at best in class earlier in the summer. So another data point there from him where, again, he was just tearing it up and, you know, had goals that felt like every time the ball came down his end and was playing alongside Landon O'Neal. So the two of them were, you know, a really fun duo to watch that day. Hunter is, you mentioned it, a lethal, lethal shooter, really good finisher, and is also exceptional off of like a left-to-left split. And that either at X coming up the hash or from the wing getting to top side where he can sweep and shoot it or feed it or, you know, just dangerous good things happen when Hunter gets to the middle of the field like that. And yeah, just those two guys, you know, we've seen a ton. Gray, most of our data points are based off of spring film. And, you know, like we said, I got to see New Canaan Staples in person, but also like a lot of those FCAC games are our stream, so we're able to catch a ton of it. And what stands out to me, he's a slasher. Like when I think of the word slasher, like that's what comes to mind. He's a tall, lean kid with an awesome shooting stroke. He can pull it from the range. He can shoot it on the run. Just a really, really dangerous scorer in this like slashing kind of way, and he's fast. I think he could play some midfield and would be a really dangerous midfielder early in his career. And again, I think those three are three really special offensive players.
I want to throw it to Ned because I want to stay on this Eclipse team, and a guy you had circled on there is Walker Harvey, a standout LSM who's been making the rounds. Well, what do you make of his game?
Yeah, I think he's, you know, a good example. And the 28s have such a deep LSM class. And I think he is kind of up there in that top tier of these really, really high-end LSMs. I was really impressed with just his ability to make plays between the restraining lines, and whether it's picking up ground balls or getting in the hands, you know, maybe on a ride in the middle of the field. And, you know, he was also just so fast. Like you can tell, like when he picked the ball up and turned the corner, like he could spark offense for that Eclipse team. And, you know, kind of putting on all those things together, you know, leads to him having, you know, or being one of those, you know, high-end LSM guys in this 28 class.
Shades of Robbie Hopper in there, I think, right? If you're familiar with that name, the standout Virginia freshman last year. Cap, can you size up, contextualize that comment of just how amazing this LSM crew in the 28 class is?
Yeah, I think there's four guys that are like going to dominate 9-9. Those guys are going to really dominate. You know, there's a handful of them. And then I don't think that there's another crew that falls right below them that I think is also really good. And so super, super deep LSM class. I'll just throw out a few names here. Max Delvescovo from Malvern Prep plays for Philly Freedom. Casey Gilchrist from Massapequa plays for Team 91 Long Island, the Venom team that actually won NLF. So I have a handful of standouts coming for those guys. Cooper Schmorgowitz from Summit and BBL. Max Melchioni from Del Barton and Leading Edge. Ned just mentioned Walker Harvey. I think he's also spectacular. Nikki Julian, an Annapolis Hawks, and Choate LSM that also plays some D and can step down and go down to close. I think that group, I think that's a core of guys that are really, really talented. And there's another one, I guess, that, you know, it would be remiss to not at least mention. And he's a little bit different because I think he plays a little bit more close defense from time to time than the rest of these guys. And that's Mason Kennedy from Thunder and down at Lassiter in Georgia. So a really, really deep group that I think is really going to dominate a lot of the poll, you know, ranking, so to speak. You know, that's going to be a lot of those LSMs towards the top before we get to a ton of close guys.
It just to add a few things on those guys, Develesco, guy who's really talented. It's fascinating to see him play so much offense down at the turf last month.
Yeah, yeah.
Cooper Schmorgowicz, oh my goodness, he his
do you have a like the do prototypical... you have it a PLL or NCAA player comp for Cooper Schmorgowitz by chance?
I think, you know, what comes to mind out of York is Ryan Kennedy. This
yes,
really good lefty. Super, super. No, no. Can't put me up to that, listeners. He is very similar in frame, lefty ability, and all that good jazz. And, you know, you might be like, oh, D3 guy comparing the potential five-star here. he was a PLL player here, so... No, like Brian Karalunis, just super grip, great off the ground. That kind of just insane stick skills that it was pretty crazy to watch him come off the wings of faceoffs, and just he finds those gaps where other players wouldn't, and it'll just escape with the ball and race it down. He's got the stick skills, got the cover ability, and he was just an all-around presence out there.
I do think your other comparison that people may be a little bit more familiar with is Ben Ware, right? A little bit more of your bowling ball type of build than your typical Robbie Hopper, like long rangy LSM, but very similar game. Super disruptive, strong, great with the rock, can push transition, and, you know, just kind of that playmaker with a pull type of mentality.
And see, I would have given that to Devilesco, am I saying that right? Max from
I think it's Delvescovo.
Delvescovo. I think he's more just maybe because I've seen him play so much offense with the team. Ten.
I mean, and it was I sat next to you for a half of it. It was incredible, right? Like he was like dodging and would like take the left alley and then throw the stick back into his right for an inside finish, inside shoulder finish, and like, you know, really, really impressive display of just skill with a pull, right? But yeah, like he, in his numbers from his sophomore year at Malvern are jarring, like super impressive. I want to say he had like 40 plus calls turnovers and 70 plus ground balls, you know, like really, really impressive stats that, you know, kind of jump off the table. And so, like, you don't come up with those types of numbers if you don't also defend, but he also has, like, all of that, like, skill with the rock and ability to push transition as well, which I guess that statement, skill with the rock and ability to push transition, as you're talking about LSMs, there will be a handful of people that have listening to this as we, like, Max Melchione is, like, their number one guy, like, that they love, and he is absolutely, like, you know, warrant of that type of praise. And again, super, super skilled. His ability between the lines and in the middle of the field and pushing transition is unlike any defender or LSM that I think I've seen in the last few years of getting around and really doing the evaluations at scale that we have. And so I'd put him in that category. And, you know, like of all of the guys to deserve that type of Robbie Hopper type of like offensive minded LSM comparison, I think it's Melchione that deserves that. And again, just like awesome off the wings. And he had this like big time, big moment the other day, down by a goal or down by two coming out of a timeout. He's on the ball, strips him, puts it on the ground, picks it up, pushes transition. They score. And he's like pounding his chest, like, you know, I do this. I'm really like that. You know, like he it was awesome. It was just a big time moment for him. And, you know, like I said, was cool to catch and really impressed with his game in general.
Yeah, I think he's you know, a guy that we got to see, Dan and I. We went to Del Barton Don Bosco in March. And I think even before I really knew his name, I you know, kind of said he looks, you know, and plays somewhat like Jake Melchione, you know, at Villanova, who's, you know, a stud, and, you know, and then realized that, you know, he's a younger brother. And, you know, I was like, oh, wow, he, you know, you can really see the comparison to his older brother, who was such a stud in the middle of the field and create turnovers and put the ball on the ground and pick it up really easily and push transition. So, you know, that's, you know, definitely see the similarities between the two.
Love it. All right, let's keep this thing moving here. Obviously, it's so many guys and places and things to get to here. Let's just kick it back to you, Kev. I feel like you're next up here on the queue here to pick a guy to highlight.
Yeah, let's go back to, just since it's fresh in my mind here, 3D New England swept the 27 and 28 titles at Alliance, and they have a bunch of standouts to mention. You know, playing without Landon O'Neal, playing without Andrew Grosso, the MVP ended up being Jaden Haas, a faceoff guy who has a lot of great physical qualities. He was aggressive in those 50-50 scrums, but did end up coming up with at least half of those clamps, it felt like, as well, coming up against a guy that I want to pass it to you that we kind of saw for the first time coming off an ankle injury that he didn't want to re-aggravate, was Eli Ritchie for a first week back. It was a great matchup in that title game.
To answer your question about Eli Ritchie, who I saw on Friday night, and yes, that was my first time seeing him in person. You're able to catch some of the Spring Victor films. But again, it's just a little bit different when you can get to a face-off analysis in person. You get a little bit better feel for, you know, just how physically dominant they are and, you know, the hand speed in person and those types of things. And I think that was one of the things that I really came away with on Friday night, was there were instances where he was already up and out of his stance with the ball on his stick, pushing transition or, you know, like finding an outlet before his opponent was really up and out of his stance or off the ground, right? And so, like, his just hand speed in general was a huge piece of setting him up for success, because from there, it was like he was just had his way and was able to exit in a bunch of different spaces and, you know, take advantage of a variety of different things. And then he's incredibly skilled with the rock. So with the ball, you have to be, you know, accounting for him. But beyond that, he's savvy beyond his years in terms of like the sub game stuff. I feel like even now, you know, you have your dominant faceoff guys a lot, and it's like they win it, and, you know, whether they push transition or not, great. But like the next step is like they're just headed to the box, and he takes it to the next level in terms of doing different things to put pressure on the defense, whether it's going to X and like two manning with another different dynamic sweet lax dodger that like you have to be worried about. Or he's just like a single invert and go back there and dodge himself, or, you know, like pretend to do any of those things and then just burst and beat you to the box. And now they have a step through there. Right? And so it's like his just, to me, is savvy beyond his years in terms of, you know, what he's able to do post draw. And then on the draw, incredibly fast hands, just in a dominant display on Friday night.
Just a dominant athlete in general. Like he sticks out as soon as you lay eyes on him with his physical attributes. His ability to win it forward on Championship Sunday was really amazing and bury the rock.
I plan to track down that film, you know, like championship games you always want to, you know, check out, but specifically I really want to watch that face-off matchup of the duo of Ritchie and Luke Drewhot, who's out of Jupiter and again really talented and super skilled with the ball post draw, really really good athlete, fast, and again those two versus that duo of Jaden Haas and Andrew Grosso is, to me, like in my world, that is must watch TV.
So no Grosso, but that is what made Haas that much more valuable in Root's MVP honors. Got that offense the ball a lot. And two of the standouts from that end of the field for me were midfielder Paul Kaczynski, just a downhill guy who can create his shot at will. It seemed like he creates a lot of space for himself. And Eddie Breslin was super slick. I'm a big fan of his game, whether it's his ability to score two hands, is kind of giving what taking whatever the defense gives him in a way that struck me very similarly as like he's not super big and imposing, so he doesn't have the maybe ability to speed by or post up, so he really has high IQ to find soft spots, find openings where others couldn't. Kind of remind me of, I'm interested if you think this comparison is crazy, underwhelming or what, but maybe it's just an excuse to throw back the nickname I had on this appearance this time last year, Nate Handles Randles from Team DMV, back down at the National All-Stars games. Kind of similar game in that, like, they kind of just get the job done and produce a lot. And I'm a big fan of Breslin's game. He stuck out to me at best in class the week prior, and I wrote him up, and he continued that momentum going in the week following.
Yeah, no, I like that comparison in terms of like the similarities that you could see. Do you have a nickname that's gonna like give that a run for its money?
Steady Eddie is usually the one that comes to mind, but the Heady Eddie Breslin. I gotta workshop that one a little bit. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah,
but just to keep it on with the 3D New England club, because you alluded to it, the 27s were phenomenal. They suffered a shock upset the day prior and really came together and played super well. Just to kind of continue on the face-off theme, Harvard commit Finley McClintock, he's got the physical tools to make an impact in the next level because he's super athletic. Swimming pass, he does that win the draw and swim dodge like in one motion fairly well. It's a, kind of a fun move to practice when you're already committed on the summer scene. But his stick skills and sidearm shots, passing, all really stood out to me. And obviously the knowns, Henry Card, John Lynch, those two lefties coming out of the box. And a guy who really stuck out to me is Denver commit Nick Donovan, Pingree guy. The Pingree faithful in this squad was, they've always been really good on this 3D New England squad. And Connor O'Neill is one of them. One of those uncommitted guys who you're kind of scratching your head and wondering, what's a good landing spot for him? Because I think he does have the talent. And Grady Alder, a UMass commit in between the pipes, just kind of that Owen Salinger type, takes up a lot of the net and makes a lot of body saves and just keeps the ball out at all costs. Pure ball stopper. So those are some of the guys that caught my eye. Coming up against a Team 10 Connor Morsell-led offense where just he continues to shine in that lefty wing role where he is just continuing to elevate his game, improve year over year, where he has this awareness and sense that he can kind of manipulate slides and find these spots where it's like, how do you lose him off ball because he's so known? And when you do it, he just has a riser or a creative finish to finish it off. So the 27s, don't think we forgot about you because we're still watching.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of telling that is the team that ended up winning it all, right? It's a talented group of committed kids that still has a group of uncommitted guys that all of that talented group of committed guys needs to do their part for in order for them to become committed, right? And that's like the blend of where these guys are at, right? Like the uncommitted guys on the team don't have the opportunities to show the way that they would when, you know, the committed guys are not taking it as seriously as they could. And so I think that is a important like relationship in the club space is making sure that like your guys that get off the board in the first cycle continue to do their part to help the second cycle kids get off the board as well.
We also got some next cycle of the 29s to discuss. I know, Ned, you've been all over the 29s. It's fascinating to hear you say off pod just how many high-level guys that you've seen over the last few weekends? Any other guys that we haven't gotten to yet?
Yeah, definitely a couple. And I don't want to, you know, hammer 3D New England too much, but, you know, their 29 team was also pretty good. I'll quickly just go through, Cooper Lilly was an attackman for the 3D New England 2029 team that I really liked. Kind of your prototypical lefty attackman. Loved kind of, you know, initiating from that lefty wing and getting topside, you know, and could hammer the ball on the run or with his feet set, and also had really good, really nice hands inside and could finish through traffic. So liked him a lot. He's a Hamden Hall Country Day kid. And then one more 3D New England guy is Benjamin Fenard, a defenseman for the River School. He was great at, you know, just putting pressure on hands and, you know, making ball carriers super uncomfortable, and was doing it throughout the entire game. And one more guy, you know, to kind of mention for the Sweetlax team, and I think we'll kind of get to him for IDX, but you know, and Dan and Kevin, I think you can, you know, also attest to this, but is Keegan Louie, Salisbury attackman for the 29s, who is such a stud and is so great initiating, and not only initiating to score, but also initiating to feed, sees the field really well, comes up the hash really well. There's so many things that you want an attackman to do. And, you know, he was also at our event at IDX right before. And so I know Dan and Kevin, you got to see him also and can add more on him. But he is a guy to look out for in the 2029 class.
Yeah, that is a understatement to say the least. He is a special, special kid. I think he is super, super talented. And like you said, we got to host him about a week ago or so, 10 days now. And so a lot of that ability is very fresh on the brain here. And
got to look out for it. He's must watch appointment television. So you got to watch him.
He also doesn't score like normal goals. Like everything he does is like has some sort of like flair to it that is like, oh, that was sick. So just to hammer your point of like must watch, when you get the opportunity, he will probably do something spectacular and score in a way that you haven't seen a ton of times, if, you know, maybe ever.
Which, to your point, just real quick, I've had the privilege of kind of following him throughout the summer just through the high school summer championships, playing for the Salisbury team who ended up winning that up in Newport, where caught up with him and he was really focused on rounding out his game, which I thought was so interesting as a Canadian guy who everyone kind of boxes you in as an off-ball finisher who, yes, you have flair, you have ability to pull off these crazy highlights, but for him to be really focusing on, all right, how can I improve as a finisher? Can I actually work on my left hand a little bit? See him round out his game that way was super compelling to lead into all these other events where he's like, all right, this is actually what I do well. I'm going to toe drag and around the world you to send you packing. And it's got a lot of James Holbrook to his game in that aspect.
Wears 21 in the summer for Sweetlax, same thing. I totally agree with that comp. I see a lot of that type of like creativity, feeding ability, skill with the stick, and just like ability to kind of manipulate defenders and then take advantage of it with something in a creative, like kind of skilled, slick way. Both of those guys definitely absolutely fit that kind of description as an outer, you know, zoomed out kind of depiction of their game.
Just one last 29 to throw at you. We're giving a lot of 3D New England love. It'd be remiss to not mention Henry Bertrand, who just was gunslinging it at the turf last month at just both hands on the run, sweeps down the alley, evading slides. Really impressed with his outside shooting and pretty excited to see his game evolve as we go into next year as well. Moving right along, I think we can talk about any names that Kaplan, you may have wanted to mention. I've got quite a impressive list.
Do I have names? Do I?
Yes, you guys. I'm interested in every name that you mentioned, of course, but these two in particular, Danny Verone, Chase Aquino.
100%. I'll hit both of those guys, and it hits right on the route, one of the two routes that I plan to take here. The first of which is just a quick summary of some of the championship aspects of NLF. I got to go and catch those games, and in that setting, it's, you know, it's one game, so you're full games, so you get great notes, tons of analysis, and all of those types of things. You can really like focus in on it compared to when you're at the larger site and you're bouncing around, you're catching halves, you know, so on and so forth. But with that, so the 2027 NLF championship, went to Laxachusetts. Stacked team, tons of commitments. A couple guys that really stood out to me. Finn Kilborn took MVP, downhill midfielder, five-star, number 21 player in the class, headed to Princeton, you know, lived up to all of those types of billing and expectations. A defensive duo of Deion Kitsos, who's headed to Duke, and Jack Sepiel, who's headed to Princeton. Kitsos was tasked with guarding the number two player in the country in JT Cross and did a great job of making things tough on him. JT had a couple of goals, but Kitsos definitely, you know, made his life much harder than what he was hoping it would be for 60 minutes. And then in addition to Deion, who, you know, goes to Milton, and again, a lefty that like is a very much so like a sit down, hunker down, tough physical cover defender. And then Jack Sepiel, who tandem with him works really well, just kind of like orchestrating slides, being the slide guy himself and being disruptive in that manner. But the thing that is, you know, his superpower is ability off the carpet. He comes up with every ground ball, it feels like, over the course of any game you watch, whether it's, you know, in the spring with Tabor or it's with this Laxachusetts team, just incredibly, incredibly talented and awesome stick. And it feels like every ground ball that he has the opportunity to pick up is his, and he's going the other way with it. And then a third guy that I'll shout out quickly in terms of the Laxachusetts standouts is another Army commit in Daniel Guinney. Big, strong, athletic midfielder, great down the alleys, makes awesome decisions, and you know, really skilled, and is just an awesome blend of, you know, skill and ability and size and athleticism, to the point that, like, yeah, I would not be surprised to see him, you know, early to playing time and filling a game day role for Army pretty early in his career. That wouldn't shock me one bit. And so that kind of hits the Laxachusetts guys that I recall, you know, really standing out among the pack in terms of their ability to come up with the championship. The next was the 2028 Team 91 Long Island Venom. A really great display. I think the most important thing about them is, you know, like, there's lots of star power, you know, around this 2028 class. Venom has a handful of guys that I think are at the top of a lot of boards. But what stands out the most about them is just production and like a team sense, like team defense, dialed, detail oriented. Everybody's playing together. They're crisp, and, you know, all of their, you know, work in between the lines is great. Short sticks play hard. Offensively, they're skilled. And most importantly about that offensive side of the ball is there is this trio of big, strong, athletic midfielders that come out of the box and are intimidating downhill threats that are, you know, really, really impressive, all three of them. And so I'll touch on those guys. Starting with Chase Aquino, who you mentioned. Chase, out of the Hill School, plays obviously with this 91 Long Island Venom team. Really, really impressive athlete. The younger brother of Hunter Aquino, who a lot of NCAA fans know in terms of, you know, being one of the best at the collegiate level already at Penn State. And Chase is, you know, very similar game, similar body styles, similar builds, similar game. Great range shooter, but really skilled off the dodge, and just a downhill like threat. And like we said, it's him and then Benjamin Christofaros, who comes out of the box, and Liam Burns, who comes out of the box. Those three guys come out, and it's like pick your poison, but all three of them can kill us in different ways. I think Aquino, like we said, you know, and touched on his game. His game isn't so different than Christofaros, who is, you know, again, just really, really an impressive, imposing athlete. The biggest difference between the two of them is I think Ben does a little bit more between the lines and on the defensive end, hunkers down, plays great defense, and is, again, just a dominant athlete and looking to assert that all over the place. And so really impressed with him out of Chaminade and had a great spring for them as well. And then the third, like we said, just to kind of round out that midfield that makes that team to me, you know, really scary, is Liam Burns, who's a little bit more on the skilled slick side compared to those two big behemoth athletes. But again, just brings a ton to the table. And he ended up finishing the game with a ton of points in that championship game. Again, really slick, skilled, great vision, great feeder, and it brings a lot to the table for that offense. Verone, another one of those athletes, I think, or another one of those midfielders, excuse me, that I think fits the mold that we were just talking about, like dominant athlete. I was most impressed with him in June. I thought that he was explosive and like extremely fast, and you know, the legs were serving him really well. And again, just like two-handed downhill, extremely hard shot, like from the perimeter off step downs, it's a goal. And on the run, you know, same thing. It's just a really dominant athlete that is able to strike at will, and you know, just is an automatic slide, right? And so like if you're one of those offenses that, you know, is relying on midfield production and midfielders to draw slides and go by guys and those types of things, like Verone has to be one of the guys that's at the top of your board. All right, 29s. Let me run through it. I'll spend a little bit less time on them, but I mean, this Long Island Express group that won the 2029 championship is, I think, going to end up being loaded with studs. And again, I think one of the things that stands out to me about that group was the defensive side of the ball. Two lefties really stand out. That's Anthony Moore, who won MVP of it. Really fast, skilled off the ground, great in transition from Chaminade. Had a couple of goals in the game, which certainly helps in terms of an LSM coming away with MVP honors. Dylan Bramoff, younger brother of Ethan Bramoff, St. Anthony's High School, again, will definitely be one of the top defenders in my eyes, I would say, for this 2029 class come this time next year. Super disruptive, great with the rock, really skilled as a cover, it checks all the boxes in terms of what you're looking for out of a dominant defender. And then on the other side of the ball, I think that they have a couple of guys that, you know, are again going to end up being really high end. One of them is Lachlan Dumai out of the Hill School, who I think is, you know, a absolute stud. Great between the lines, plays a ton of midfield in the summer, but played some attack this spring for Hill. Again, really, really skilled, great athlete, fast, gets to his right hand, and is lethal from there. And then the last offensive guy I'll touch on just before we turn things back over is Brennan McNally from Northport. I thought that he is just dynamic, right? And so had a ton of goals, split and come up the hash and like hammer these sidearm shots, which, you know, when these younger guys, and it's, you know, he couldn't be more than, you know, 5'7", 5'8", 145, 150 pounds, but can shoot it like, you know, a bunch of these 2028s that we were watching all day. And it's just like, you know, the ball is hitting the back of the net, and it sounds like, you know, it's hitting those Gilmas, and it sounds like, you know, a lot of those older guys. And so I was just really impressed with him, and it is a sign of, you know, just how skilled he is, and a little bit undersized, but explosive, dynamic, great shooter, and filled it up in that 2029 championship game.
Love that Dumai shout as well. Your second to last guy there is just a powerful righty, man. He's not flashy as other top recruits, but his game with an overhand, high to low release, just is pretty automatic. And he can go get that right-to-right sweep to get separation. You know it's coming, but stopping it is another thing.
Cap, there are a handful more guys that I could touch on from that 29 class, but, you know, we got to start to get to wrapping things up here as we hit over the hour mark. But that's all the more meat on the bone for both next episodes and to make sure you're checking out all the evaluations that you can get your hands on.
Check it back on InsideTheCross.com for all of those and much more. Cap, as we wind down this podcast, I'm interested in your thoughts on the biggest risers in terms of their stock. 2027s that we've already mentioned or haven't mentioned that you ranked last year, you've been pretty impressed with the first couple months of this summer, or just 2028s from the start of the summer to now that you have blown you away in terms of you see a new thing each time you see them. Any guys stop
right? I'll start with the 2028s, and I think the goalie position is one that's really interesting. There's a lot of names that get thrown around and a lot of guys that are really talented, and so you kind of have this like sliding scale a lot of the times. One guy that has really risen for me is another one of those Mad Dog guys, and that's Hank Kalafatis, who I know, you know, had a little bit of a reputation coming into things, but the West Coast kid, so he's a little bit less in the you know, near eyesight in terms of the spring season. And then he plays with Weston Guerra, who, you know, is one of the most known goalies in the class. And so that also might steal a little bit of the spotlight from time to time as well. But I was blown away by Hank the other day. I think he's huge, right? And so that alone, he's going to stand out. But his fluency of motion at that size, I think, is really impressive. And he uses his body well. He plays his angles. Talking with one of their coaches, and they said that they see a little bit of DeLuca in him. So, like, you know, that's a pretty strong comparison. And I actually said that same thing about Michael Slusar in the 2027 class, in the 2026 class. And so that's like a comparison that I guess I like. But again, I think it's just one guy that kind of comes to mind in terms of like continuing to rise in terms of their rankings and notoriety. I think another one that kind of fits that bill is a defender. Again, more 3D New England, but a defender that is actually transferring from BC High to St. Seb's for the remainder of his high school career. And that is Johnny Hayden, who actually came to IDX the fall of last year. And so he's another one that's been on the radar for a bit longer. And it's really interesting to see that, you know, we've known him and liked him. And the more that he's played this summer, the more coaches are, you know, validating that. And so it's been kind of cool to just kind of see that evolution of things. But yeah, just a really talented player. And he used to play LSM, so he's between the lines making plays. Now he's down at close. And like, you can see just the element of that he used to be an LSM and how clean his stick work is and like how great off the ground and how great in the clear and all of those types of things he is down at close. But like, it makes a ton of sense if you know that he used to be, you know, much more tasked with being in the middle of the field and, you know, facilitating offense and pushing transition and those types of things.
Cap, where would we be without you? Tons of great analysis in this episode of the IL Preps podcast, but the man that brought it all together, the glue guy of the office, Ed Forglish. Give us a lasting thought for this podcast.
Well, you know, like Dan said, I think, you know, we could probably go on and on about, you know, so many different guys that we've been able to see and, you know, we've got notes on and stuff like that. So I guess, you know, if you want more, you gotta get the next episode.
Tune back in, people.
Brilliant teaser. We'll leave it there. Thanks for listening. If you liked it, share with a friend, leave a review, and we'll catch you next time wherever you get your podcast.
Peace.